now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Pollard, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. You're familiar with the show Friday Night Lights and the whole theme of Friday Night Lights around the country with football. Well, it's now Friday Night Tweets because we had yet another drop from Elon Musk of the sort of background at Twitter, and it was another installment of the quote-unquote Twitter files that were released last night, and it shows the company's internal communications around the January 6th Capitol riot and what led up to the decision to ban then-President Donald Trump from the platform. Also showed how Twitter coordinated with the FBI for the censorship of individuals and how executives governed the platform with an iron fist. They barred user engagement for tweets they did not like or presumed to be false. Josh Hawley, of course, the Republican senator from Missouri, tweeted last night, "It's even worse than we thought. The worries by conservatives that they were victims of blacklists, suspensions, and shadow banning." Remember, there were a lot of complaints by conservatives, and everybody said, "Oh, no, 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 that's a conspiracy theory, all that kind of stuff. That's not happening." Well, it seems as though it's all turning out to be true, according to the files released by Elon Musk. And it's also contrary to the testimony from the company's executives. Now, I've got an audio clip of Jack Dorsey, and of course, he was the chief at Twitter at the time, and he testified back in September of 2018. He was asked some very specific questions, and here's how he answered them in that hearing.
Social media is being rigged to censor conservatives. Is that true of Twitter?
No.
I don't know what Twitter is up to. It sure looks like to me that they're censoring people, and they ought to stop it. Are you censoring people?
No.
Twitter shadow banning prominent Republicans. It's bad. Is that true?
No.
So apparently, the no's from Jack Dorsey were apparently not necessarily accurate. We'll put it that way. Josh Hawley put it, quote, "It's hard to count the number of lies Twitter executives told under oath to Congress." The words of Josh Hawley. Representative Jim Jordan also echoing last night, "They told us Twitter didn't shadow ban." False. Now, Jordan was recently selected to become the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee when the Republicans take over the majority in the House in January. He also said the Twitter tyranny was, quote, "worse than we thought." Quote, "What's worse, former Twitter executives lying about how shadow banning, the media ignoring the story or promoting the lies." At the time, quote, "Big tech will be held accountable for their flagrant bias." That from Representative Pat Fallon of Texas. Earlier on Friday, part one of the third Twitter Files installment was released via Substack. That's the publication and website that Matt Taibbi writes for. The internal documents were dated from October 2020 to January of 2021. They show, quote, "the erosion of standards within the company in months before January 6th. Decisions by high-ranking executives to violate their own policies and more, also that being against the backdrop of ongoing documented interaction with federal agencies." That's what Taibbi told followers last night. He continued, "Whatever your opinion on the decision to remove Trump that day, the internal communications at Twitter between January 6th and January 8th have clear historical import. Even Twitter's employees understood in the moment it was a landmark moment in the annals of speech." Taibbi reporting the executives at Twitter, quote, "started processing new power following their decision to ban Trump, indicating they were prepared to ban future presidents and White Houses, perhaps even Joe Biden." But one exec says, quote, "the new administration will not be suspended by Twitter unless absolutely necessary." The communications also showing Twitter executives and staff operating in coordination with the FBI and other federal agencies. The Twitter CEO, Elon Musk, though, defending the efforts of the FBI. He said, quote, "With rare exceptions, the FBI seems to want to do the right thing, but there is no question that Twitter operated as a Democratic Party activist machine." Well, how did that go over with Congressman Jim Comer, another of the committee chairs who will be investigating Twitter?
We've already requested information based on Elon Musk's first Twitter file drop with the three individuals he named in leading the effort to ban the laptop story, which we now know is true. Look, I look at it differently than some. Twitter's a private company. I believe they're entitled to do whatever they want. My concern is when the government steps in. And what we have here, more evidence of the FBI communicating with big tech, with social media companies. We always suspected this. Now we know Zuckerberg was the first to proclaim this. Now, through these emails, we're seeing this happen with Dorsey while he was at the helm at Twitter. The government should never be involved in suppressing free speech. And what we have here is the government, and we're talking about the FBI, and who knows what the Biden administration's done. We haven't gotten to that part yet. They were playing a leading role in telling Twitter to ban conservatives on social media outlets, to ban conservative speech. And you wonder, where does this end? Is it just big tech? Did they work with media outlets like Gannett and other outfits that are clearly biased towards liberals? I mean, this is something that needs to be investigated, and the Republicans are going to investigate it on day one.
That is James Comer speaking last night on the Fox News Channel. Now, that was the release last night. On Thursday, part deux, French for part two, of the Twitter files came out, and that showed how the company would build blacklists of certain users or tweets. And those internal documents were shared with journalist Barry Weiss. Quote, "A new hashtag Twitter files investigation reveals that teams of Twitter employees build blacklists, prevent disfavored tweets from trending, and actively limit the visibility of entire accounts or even trending topics, all in secret without informing users." Weiss then recalled that Twitter heads previously had denied that they performed such actions. In 2018, Twitter's head of legal policy and trust and their head of product said, quote, "We do not shadow ban," they added, "and we certainly don't shadow ban based on political viewpoints or ideology." They simply had another name for the action. Weiss reported that as Twitter executives and employees called the process of diminishing a person's reach on the platform, quote, "visibility filtering," or VF. Weiss reporting that, quote, "Think about visibility filtering as being a way for us to suppress what people see to different levels. It's a very powerful tool." Musk confirming in a later tweet that some accounts on the right were suspended, even when Twitter internally acknowledged that no rules were broken. Federal judge refrained from holding former President Trump's legal team in contempt of court Friday for defying a May subpoena demanding classified documents. That is according to multiple reports. Judge Beryl Howell, an Obama appointee, needling Trump's team and the Department of Justice to sort out their differences among themselves during the hearing. That according to ABC and The Guardian. Lawyers for the DOJ had petitioned Judge Howell, who sits on the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, to hold Trump's team in contempt, arguing that they had flouted the subpoena. Friday's roughly 80-minute-long sealed court proceeding concluded about 3:30 in the afternoon. The outcome was not immediately announced publicly. The Washington Examiner reached out to a court spokesperson for additional information. CNN reporting, quote, "This afternoon, the court held a hearing regarding an ongoing and sealed grand jury matter. The matter remains under seal pursuant to the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure and local criminal rule." So those are the reports, but that remains under seal. It's 6:19. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up, we'll be talking with Jennifer Harper at the Washington Times. Interesting Republican Party activities this weekend we'll be talking about with Jennifer. Jim Trusty will join us, and he's got some very interesting legal perspectives this morning, as always. And coming up, we've got John Gizzi. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland all on the way this morning. Cheryl Atkinson has the weekend off. Right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, construction, two lanes are blocked between the GW Parkway and the Dulles Toll Road. Inner loop of the Beltway in Virginia, lanes are open and you're not tapping the brakes there. On 66 in Fairfax County, no construction or crashes on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. Now to 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, if you have cruise control set, that lanes are wide open. And in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, I don't have any reports of any delays there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
For today, we're looking at cloudy skies, a high of 44. Tomorrow, look for a high temperature in the cloudy Washington area of 49 degrees. More clouds on Monday with a high of 44. Tuesday, the sunshine is back, the high only 42. And Wednesday, clouds back in the picture with a high of 39. Right now in Washington, we're at 30 degrees. We're heading up to 44 this afternoon. 6:21 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
And it is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you very much for being with us. And we've heard so much this week about the release of Brittany Griner. Paul Whelan, of course, the U.S. Marine who has been held by the Russians since 2018, remains in a Russian prison this morning. Brittany Griner is home. She made it home yesterday, landing in San Antonio at Lackland Air Force Base, and she was taken immediately to a medical facility for tests and to see what condition she was in after that time in the Russian prison. Here's what President Biden said about the prisoner swap. This was earlier in the week as he made that announcement.
Moments ago, standing together with her wife, Sherelle, in the Oval Office, I spoke with Brittany Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along.
And as I mentioned, Paul Whelan remains in Russian captivity, and here's how the president addressed that.
We never forgot about Brittany. We've not forgotten about Paul Whelan, who's been unjustly detained in Russia for years. This was not a choice of which American to bring home. We brought home Trevor Reed when we had a chance early this year. Sadly, for totally illegitimate reasons, Russia is treating Paul's case differently than Brittany's.
So John Kirby said something very similar, that the Russians view Paul Whelan's case differently. I guess the question, though, is why we let the Russians dictate the rules of the game. I thought it was a negotiation. Well, if the Russians don't consider Whelan part of the deal, then forget about it. Sure that that's the best way to approach this, but there's a lot of criticism coming from conservatives, and we'll get to that shortly. Peter Doocy, of course, the White House correspondent, asking that question in a press conference.
In this prisoner swap, why did Russia get such a better deal?
Look, you know, I've talked about this, and I'll say this again. Here were our choices. Our choices was Brittany or no one at all. Bringing home one American or no American at all.
And that's... gave up a professional athlete. We gave up a prolific arms dealer who was convicted of trying to kill Americans, who was called the Merchant of Death.
The professional athlete is also an American citizen. So let's not forget that. who deserved
American citizens.
And so, and I have explained how the Russians have illegally treated, totally illegitimately treated his situation. I've been very clear on that. We've laid that out for you. And again, the president felt that this was an opportunity to bring Brittany home. He is going to continue to do everything he can to bring Paul Whelan home, just like he did with Trevor Reed.
The questions continued, and the press secretary, Corinne Jean-Pierre, continued.
Unfortunately, the choice became to either bring Brittany home or no one. As the president said this morning, he will never stop working to secure Paul's release and return home, and he will not give up. On a personal note, Brittany is more than an athlete, more than an Olympian. She is an important role model and inspiration to millions of Americans, particularly the LGBTQI plus Americans and women of color.
And here's what Paul Whelan told CNN.
I have to say I am greatly disappointed that more has not been done to secure my release, especially as the four-year anniversary of my arrest is coming up. I was arrested for a crime that never occurred. I'm happy that Brittany is going home today and that Trevor went home when he did, but I don't understand why I'm still sitting here. My bags are packed. I'm ready to go home. I just need an airplane to come and get me.
So the words of Paul Whelan, who remains in Russia. I want to turn to Kyrsten Sinema. You've heard that she has dropped her relationship with the Democratic Party, and she is turning to become an independent. Well, here's how she laid it out.
Registering as an independent and showing up to work with the title of independent is a reflection of who I've always been.
Well, coincidentally, she's up for re-election in 2024, and we saw how close it was for Mark Kelly in Arizona. So Kyrsten Sinema is making that move now. Chad Pergram is at Fox News, and he asked Senate Majority Leader currently, Chuck Schumer, about it.
Does this also mean now that your phone won't be constantly calling Joe Manchin and back and forth here and Kyrsten Sinema because you have that 51st? So that changes the power dynamic.
They don't always agree with us on certain issues, but they are tremendous contributors to our caucus, and we'll continue to work with them.
You know, the dialogue in the country and almost the retribution now, if you're not in agreement with somebody over politics, you ban them or you abandon them or you don't speak to them. Well, here's an interesting note. This is from Politico. Kyrsten Sinema, now moving to become an independent, has been dropped by the leading progressive digital firm, Authentic. They dropped her already. She announced yesterday she'd become an independent, and of course that's a bit of a wrinkle in the Democrat plans for their small Senate majority. Well, Authentic has represented Sinema for years. The firm saw an internal revolt over its work for the senator earlier this year when she voted against several of the Biden administration initiatives and refused to support revamping the filibuster rules to move legislation on voting rights. One employee wrote in a union message that the person felt that they were, quote, doing the devil's work. Employees were told they could be removed from the account if they didn't feel comfortable. Well, Politico reporting that Authentic dropped Kyrsten Sinema yesterday. Authentic declining to comment. Sinema's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The Sinema campaign has paid more than $700,000 to Authentic since the start of 2020. That according to Federal Election Commission records. According to the filings, expenses included digital consulting and list acquisition. So let me get this straight. She spent $700,000 with these people since 2020, which is not that long ago. She, a free thinker, drops her Democratic label, turns independent. Authentic declining to comment, but basically the message is don't let the screen door hit you on the way out. Interesting world we live in when it comes to politics and the whole notion that if you don't agree with me, I ain't going to work with you. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to kick you out of the family. It's 6:29. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And in the news, Grant Wall, one of the most well-known soccer writers in the United States, died early this morning while covering the World Cup match between Argentina and the Netherlands. U.S. media seated near him said that Wall fell back in his seat in a section of the stadium reserved for journalists during extra time of the game. The organizing committee said that Wall received immediate emergency medical treatment on site, which continued as he was transferred by ambulance to the hospital, but he did die this morning. In Ukraine, the utility crews are struggling to patch up power lines. It's been a two-month Russian military blitz targeting Ukrainian infrastructure. Technicians pivoting between routine work and emergency response are at the forefront of efforts to keep the lights on, computers running, and space heaters warming as Russia increasingly focuses on trying to freeze Ukrainians into submission. It's 6:33. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, heads up, construction. Two right lanes are blocked between the GW Parkway and the Dulles Toll Road. On the inner loop of the Beltway in Virginia, no lanes are blocked and you're at speed. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I looked at the cameras there. Inner loop and outer loop, clear. Now in Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes in either direction. And in Prince George's County, traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway or 95, nothing in the road is slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
For today, we've got clouds, a high of 44, cloudy tomorrow, high 49. Monday looks cloudy with a high 44, and Tuesday, sunshine, high of 42. Our lows will be in the 30s through Monday night and then down in the 20s on Tuesday night. In Washington, 30 degrees, and we're headed to 44 this afternoon, 6:34 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, and Jennifer Harper is with us, and she pens Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times every weekend. She is with us. Jennifer, great to have you along.
It's good to be with you, Rick.
The midterms are now past us. How do you kind of sum up how people are feeling? You have all these great poll numbers, and what, you know, kind of what's on people's minds these days?
Well, actually, you know, most of the polls that I share with you and our very patient listeners out there are always annoying or depressing or something, but I found one that was really very interesting, and this is an Ipsos poll, and Ipsos is kind of an international group, and it is a poll of 2,219 adults. I'm just going to read you the numbers, and let's just think about them. Anyway, 68% of U.S. adults now agree that there is more common ground among the American people than the news media and political leaders portray. 67% agree that people are always capable of changing for the better. 66% agree that politicians should put aside their differences and compromise. 56% agree that most people are trying to do the right thing. 55% agree it isn't difficult to be friends with someone whose political views are different from your own. And last but not least, 52% agree that our society has a responsibility to take care of people in need. And this is an Ipsos poll, came out this week, didn't get much publicity, but, you know, kind of good news. So maybe that's the reason why a lot of people didn't pay heed to it, I guess.
The incoming Republicans are going to be having some beefs about the amount of money that's being spent by the Democrats, and you had an article on that in the column this week.
Yes, I did. So did a whole lot of other people, but one of the people that really summarized all of this spending that's going on was House Republican Whip Steve Scalise, and he had a very tidy summary, Rick, of what the nation and the nation's pocketbook is going to be facing in this day and age. Here's what he had to say. He said this to Fox Business Network host Larry Kudlow on Wednesday. He said, "We've got to get away from those big spending bills. It's why we have the inflation and the high cost of everything today, because government went on a drunken spending spree for the last 2 years. You know, every bill was a trillion this and a trillion that. And ultimately, somebody's got to pay for it. And he went on to say, again, this is Steve Scalise, people know this idea that you can't have a free lunch, that student loans can't be free, and your house note can be free. There's no such thing. And yet Democrats sold that bill of goods falsely for the last 2 years, and it's wrecked the economy. It's made energy costs so expensive that people are making tough choices on whether they can even keep their houses warm in a cold winter right now. So this is where we are. We've got to get this country back on track. Again, very nifty and short summary from House Republican Whip Steve Scalise.
While we're on Republicans, they're having a big party tonight. Where?
Yeah, this is a good one. You know, a lot of people will recall that the Republican Party is sometimes called the Grand Old Party. Well, there's a certain group of Republicans that are definitely having a Grand Old Party tonight, and that would be the New York Young Republicans. And they are having a bodacious get-together up in Manhattan, undisclosed location. Here's what they said to me in a statement. They said, we will hold our 110th annual gala, just as we have done through every major world event, including both world wars and COVID-19 since our founding. They were founded in 1911. So this is the old school kind of a group. And this is a black tie event with an open bar, past hors d'oeuvres, a sumptuous seated meal, and a pretty spectacular guest list if you're thinking about Republicans. The official host for the night is Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. And Donald J. Trump Jr. and Jack Prosbiak, hope I got that right, that he is senior editor of Human Events, and the toastmaster for the evening is Andrew Giuliani Jr. And yes, his father Rudy Giuliani is also going to be on the Republican celebrity guest list. And just a couple of the special guests that are there, and this is in no particular order: Steve Bannon, Steve Cortez. They're both former advisors to Donald Trump, Congressman-elect George Santos of New York, Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe, Fox News contributors DeRoy Murdoch and Mark Pepper, former New England Patriots defensive end Jake Paquette, Roger Stone will be there, and also the entrepreneur and Blackwater founder Eric Prince is going to be there as well, and a lot of foreign dignitaries, too. It's just an interesting group of people. They're going to hear from national speakers. They're going to mingle with the special guests and discuss opportunities for the advancement of our mission. And what is their mission? And this is it. In place for over 70 years is to promote and maintain the principles of the Republican Party and to resist and expose political corruption. So that's a big party in New York tonight with the New York Young Republicans.
All right, so that's the party in New York, but the beer was flowing on Capitol Hill this week?
Yeah, well, so to speak, I've had a little item in the Beltway called Ale to the Chief. And there's a lot of competitions that go on Capitol Hill, and this is a very unique one. This is called the Hill Staff Homebrew Competition. And this features eligible congressional legislative staff and federal employees who brew their own beer, and they enjoy a little competition. This is, again, the Hill Staff Homebrew Competition, and it was got some help from the American Home Brewers Association. And according to Julia Hertz, she's the executive director of this group, she says, it's exciting to see the Capitol Hill community embrace the ingredients of bipartisanship, beer, and friendly competition. What happens is these folks brew their beer, and then there are some judges that come along to judge which is the best of the home brews. And here we go with the winners. Capitol Hill staff homebrew champion best of show came from Stuck in Committee, the name of the beer they brewed, a strong bitter brewed by Joshua Sizemore. He hails from the office of Senator Steve Daines, Montana Republican. In second place was Hot Toddy Ale. This is described as a winter seasonal beer brewed by Molly Ryan. She's from the office of Senator Susan Collins, Maine Republican. And in third place, Santos L. Halper. I think that's the take on Santos L. Halper. But anyway, this is a Belgian dark strong ale brewed by Nathan James of the Congressional Research Service. And the organizers said that the participating congressional offices also included people from House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer's office, Senator Lisa Murkowski's office, Representative Earl Blumenauer, and Rodney Davis, and Mike Kelly also had personnel who was in there. So that's their Ale to the Chiefs report for this morning.
And we saved the best for last for holiday shopping.
Yes, we did. I was very pleased to get some information on this group. And if you're looking for an interesting option for your holiday gift giving, your Christmas gift giving, everything, there is a company in Virginia called Flags of Valor. And what they offer are some American flags that are handcrafted from wood by combat veterans. They're very nice looking, actually. And this company was founded by Brian Stewart. He served in the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne, and later he was a U.S. Air Force Special Operations pilot. And in his mission statement, he says, "We were founded on the simple truth that veterans deserve opportunity, Made in America matters, and we should never stop giving back. Since our earliest days, we've been dedicated to remembering, employing, and empowering our heroes." They also have Christmas ornaments, desk items, all kinds of neat things. These are all flag-based, and they're really very attractive. They also have a special keepsake frame for those who have challenge coins. And all you military folks would know what that is. And this is a way to show them off and to keep them safe. So anyway, they also have a blog called the FOV blog. If you want to see Flags of Valor, very easy. Go to flagsofvalor.com. They do specify that if you want a Christmas order, have to get that in by December 16th. So take a peek this afternoon if you're in that market. So that's your Flags of Valor for today.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, The Washington Times. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Rick.
It is now 6:45. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk to Jim Trusty next. But first, Albie D's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, there is construction. Two lanes are blocked on the right-hand side of the Beltway between the GW Parkway and the express lanes. On the inner loop of the Beltway in Virginia, no construction or crashes. On 66 in Fairfax County, lanes are clear in both directions. Now on 95 in Virginia, northbound and southbound, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, set your cruise control. Nothing is going to slow you down. And on the Maryland side of the Beltway, lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Looks cloudy today with a high of 44. More clouds tomorrow, high 49. Monday, cloudy with a high of 44. Tuesday, sunshine with a high of 42. We'll be down in the 30s tonight, tomorrow night, and Monday night, down in the 20s on Tuesday night. In Washington, 31 degrees, 6:46, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It's the Saturday morning update, and we are glad to have you with us, and we're glad to have Jim Trusty with us. He is a member of the Trump legal team. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
And Jim, each week we've been getting updates on some of the proceedings in the Trump Mar-a-Lago investigation, but I guess sometimes there are things that lawyers can't talk about.
That's exactly right, Rick. You know, there's a lot of times where litigation is public and everyone can talk about it freely, but there are some types of proceedings that are under seal. And what's interesting about it in terms of this particular week is there were wide reports yesterday about a hearing taking place in the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. But even when it's widely reported, the attorneys are not relieved of their obligation to follow the court's rules. So a long way of saying I have nothing I can report this week. But we'll certainly keep you in mind as the weeks roll forward when there's matters that are of public record that I can talk about.
Totally understand. Well, let's turn to Michael Avenatti. I think that's an interesting story because we saw how, CNN reporters were suggesting that he might make a great presidential candidate, and the gushing and adoration of many of the media outlets over Michael Avenatti. What's he doing these days?
Time. You know, you mentioned the adoration. That's probably the right word. The View even had a host comparing him to the Holy Spirit. which I have to think is kind of news to the Holy Trinity, in that this guy just had his third felony sentencing in federal court. And on this one, on top of the 5 years he had gotten for stealing from Stormy Daniels and from trying to extort Nike out of $25 million, he got another 14 years to be served consecutively. And this was basically for cheating former clients out of their money. And the stories are like bad lawyer jokes. I mean, the first is he had a client who was paralyzed in an incident in while he was in custody in Los Angeles. The county gave him $4 million. Avenatti kept most of it to start his own coffee business and to pay his own personal expenses, and trickled just a little bit to the paralyzed client who was supposed to receive the whole sum. Then he had another event with $3 million in a settlement, and he took most of that money to go get a private jet and told the client, don't worry, you're going to be getting annuity payments from me, which were going to take, I don't know, 150 years to ever add up to the $3 million. So, you know, this was a third strike in fairly quick succession. I have to think that, you know, CNN putting him on air 121 times and promoting him as a potential presidential candidate, ringing a little hollow these days. In fact, at his sentencing, the prosecutor called him a serial fraudster, and the judge seemed to agree.
$3 million and didn't even offer the guy a ride on his jet, huh?
The jet that's now forfeited to the U.S. government, I might add.
Ooh. Jim, I know you've been practicing law for a long time. You were a prosecutor, and you've been on both sides of the courtroom. What has the video camera brought in to prosecutions over the decades? Well, I mean, what is the difference from, let's say, 20 years ago when you didn't have video of every move everybody made?
Right. It's really kind of a quiet revolution in my mind as to how a lot of criminal cases go. Not all of them, but a lot of them have the benefit, maybe in some ways the curse, but usually the benefit of video. And, you know, we talked a while back, Rick, about the Rittenhouse trial in Wisconsin where he was acquitted by self-defense in a multiple shooting incident. We talked about the Arbery case down in Georgia that was, you know, mostly on videotape. Well, Rockville had its own version of this last week. And strangely enough, we've had kind of a repeat incident. The incident that I'm talking about actually originally took place in December of 2020 on the Red Line, where an off-duty FBI agent was charged with shooting an aggressive panhandler in a non-fatal shooting. Strangely enough, the verdict on that came in about 8 days ago, but just about 3 days ago, we had a fatal shooting by an off-duty FBI agent of a man at the Metro Center. So it's a weird combination of events. But this particular trial of the FBI agent in the non-fatal shooting is another one of these examples where the video eliminates really the need to focus on credibility. You know, that's what most criminal trials used to always involve. Who do I believe? Why do I believe this witness or not believe this witness? Now what juries are getting is a kind of undeniable video of the event, and they have to make sense of pretty difficult legal issues like self-defense and intent to commit murder. And so a Montgomery County jury had this video from the shooting by an off-duty FBI agent and sifted through the evidence. And I think both parties were well represented. I know the prosecutors well. I know the defense attorney well. But the jury basically had to play judge, in a sense. They had to look at this story that involved a man who undeniably had mental health issues, who had a criminal history, and who the government did not call as a witness. And they had to decide whether or not they believed that the agent's actions in using deadly force were reasonable. Well, they concluded they had a reasonable doubt. So there was an acquittal of the off-duty FBI agent. I think a hard case gets harder when the prosecution doesn't put the victim on the stand. I think there's just something inherently, not that it's illegal, not that there's anything wrong with that kind of tactical decision, but I think when it's a hard case, jurors hold it against the state that they're not even calling the person that they're calling a victim. And I have to say the other thing is kind of, I think, a sad reality, which is a lot of Montgomery County jurors ride the Metro fairly regularly. And I think they've probably sadly come to recognize there's a lot of very scary confrontational people with mental health issues. I've seen it on the Red Line before myself. And so, you know, if you've experienced any of that kind of strange aggression when you're out and about in Montgomery County or in Washington, D.C. or Northern Virginia, it certainly becomes a little easier to identify with the agent in this case who felt he was in harm's way. So difficult case, tough case, but one that I think is, again, reflective of this new trend of video trials more than credibility trials.
From time to time, we see stories about cold cases that are cracked. And there was one this week that I thought was intriguing because it goes back 43 years.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I have to say, you know, if you've ever prosecuted murder cases, and I have, you know, time is not normally on your side. You know, a lot of times witnesses become unavailable, memories fade, evidence gets destroyed. But occasionally there are these stories of kind of justice on earth that can be reassuring. And they're almost always driven by technology, and that's what happened here. You had a horrible home break-in, rape and murder of a 32-year-old nurse. And the 43-year-old case that happened in Florida has now been cracked. And basically, all they had 43 years ago was a husband coming home to find just a spectacularly brutal crime scene. Very sad situation. No real suspects. Stranger-on-stranger kind of crime. Well, you know, to the good of all, there's police officers that don't always give up. And in this case, they continued to hold the case open until new DNA technology led them to link important DNA from the crime scene to a man named Ronald Eugene Richards, a 75-year-old man who lives in Ohio. Mr. Richards was convicted in 1982 of an attempted murder, got out of prison in May of 2020, and last Friday he was indicted for this murder, and he's should be on his way to Broward County, Florida soon to stand trial. So, to me, you know, it's really how the system should work. When technology changes, to have people that are kind of awake at the switch that know that they should continue to test for either guilt or innocence when it comes to changing technology. And hopefully the family involved in this case can have some measure of peace and justice coming from the prosecution coming of Mr. Richards.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. As always, Jim, thanks for your insight. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Have a good weekend.
And you too. It is 6:56. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. 7 o'clock news coming up. Then we've got John Gizzi, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland in the 7 o'clock hour this morning.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.